everybody, and welcome to True Stories of Tinseltown. And I am so excited to have this guest on today. He is John O'Dowd, and he wrote this amazing book on an actress named Barbara Payton, and it's called Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, The Barbara Payton Story. Hi, John. What a book. And thank you so much for coming on. Thank you. I want to thank you first.
Thank you, Grace, for asking me. I really appreciate it. It was very kind of you to ask me on. Thank you for reading the book. I'm grateful for that as well. It was a tough story to research.
A hard
book to write.
And a hard book to read.
Well, yeah.
I was telling John. Yeah, I know it's so funny because I was telling John today that I just reread the book. I skip a lot of little parts here and there, but I basically read the book and I got so depressed. I feel so depressed.
It made me so sad,
but that's how good it was because you went into her life. You know?
What a way to set up your weekend. I'm sorry.
No. This is such a great topic, but because that's how compelling and sad and tragic, and you totally captured it in that book. And that's something to say, because Barbara, unfortunately, it was not a happy ending. And she had a terribly tragic life.
And very dark.
Oof.
And extremely dark. Some people have said it's like a true life film noir.
Oh, worse. One of the worst ones you could ever see. So bad, because you can't believe it would be true. Okay, so why don't we you start our talk about Barbara, where she was from, a little bit about her growing up years.
Sure. Barbara was born in Cloquet, Minnesota, a small town. And her parents were Lee and Mabel Redfield. They were quite an eccentric pair. And he was a builder, and Barbara's mom, Mabel, was a housewife. And unfortunately, they struggled with the disease of alcoholism. Mm. So Barbara and her younger brother, Frank, grew up in a very off-the-wall environment. Like I said, both parents were very eccentric. And I guess when they drank, their eccentricities became worse.
Yeah.
And it was just a very off-the-wall, offbeat upbringing. And she didn't grow up in a poverty-stricken home, household. In fact, several of her relatives had money, and her grandfather, Frank Redfield, was a very prominent business owner in Cloquet. So, and Barbara's two aunts were very wealthy. One of her aunts made a bundle of money in Texas in the oil industry.
Wow.
So, Barbara's relatives all seemed to have, great lives. But unfortunately, Barbara and her brother, like I said, grew up in this topsy-turvy household.
I can't imagine growing up with alcoholic parents.
Neither can I.
And it's so sad. But they didn't stay there long, right? They moved to Texas?
That's right. Yes, they moved to Odessa, Texas, when Barbara was approximately 11 years old. Her father was having difficulty finding himself in Cloquet, finding what he wanted to do. And so anyway, his sister Faye is the one who had made a lot of money in Texas with the oil wells.
Mm-hmm.
So she encouraged the family to join her there. And once there, Barbara's parents opened a trailer court, and they became pretty successful at that. So that's where Barbara grew up from the time she was 11 till the age of 17 when she got married to John Payton, who was an Air Force captain.
How much older was he than Barbara? Not two, right?
No, 5 years older.
Yeah. And she had been married prior, though.
Yes, and in fact, it's kind of up in the air as to how many times she had been married before John Peyton. She evidently married a schoolmate when she was 16, I believe, a kid named William Hodge, but her parents had the marriage annulled very quickly. And then I was also given information from a few people that Barbara actually married and eloped several more times.
Oh, God.
before John Peyton.
What a woman. What a girl. Yikes.
Well, the thing is, her family has never really wanted to talk about that topic with me, so I don't know if that means if it's true or not true.
Yeah, so I wonder if she would have had all annulments if she ever got divorced, if that was true from all those people. But she was just, she was a precocious young lady.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Very precocious, full of bravado, full of self-confidence. I guess you could say she was pretty ballsy.
She sounds it, and she was pretty she was beautiful as well. So
gorgeous.
She knew she had that going on with people.
See, I believe that was the root of a lot of Barbara's problems. I think she felt her power intensely. She felt the power that her beauty gave her. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of not in her best interest to feel so powerful all the time.
Yeah.
Because I think she felt she could do just about anything and always get away with it.
Because,
and as we found out, that's not what happened. That's not the case.
I agree. I think that's what I got from her as well, because it's like she just... Ugh, I wish I did. She's just so funny. Okay. She did. She felt that power. She was gorgeous. And
I'm not laughing at Barbara. I would never laugh at Barbara.
Laugh at me. Because I'm going, yeah.
I know you're not either. But it's just so off the wall. You know, the things she did were so off the wall.
They were really, like, almost unbelievable.
And endless.
Yes.
Like, you know, the only thing that ended these outrageous events was her death.
I know. Oh, yes. So why don't we get her out of Odessa and her marriage to...
John Peyton.
John Peyton.
Right. Well, they eventually moved to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Air Force,
yes.
And he decided to pursue his education at UCLA under the GI Bill. And by that time, Barbara professed an interest in modeling. She wanted to get into modeling, even though, you know, she was married and all. Mm-hmm. So she very quickly got into modeling in Los Angeles. And so she did that for a few years.
She was gorgeous. She had brown hair then, though, right?
That's right.
She hadn't
yes.
changed to blonde yet.
Yeah, that's right. And then in 1947, they had a son, John Lee Peyton.
Gosh, when we talk about him, boy.
Oh, I know. He had it pretty rough.
Yeah.
Although, you know, he stressed to me many times, Barbara never, ever mistreated him.
Uh-huh.
She was never cruel to him. I guess I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah.
So anyway, once she had, she gave birth to John Peyton, it didn't stop her dreams of making it in Hollywood. By that time, she also wanted to be an actress. So eventually she and her husband parted ways. And she stayed in Hollywood with her infant son and pursued an acting career.
So where did she get her first break? How did she get her first break?
Well, she was sent out when she was modeling. She was sent out to a nightclub in Hollywood called Slapsy Maxie's, which was owned by an entertainer named Maxie Rosenblum, I think his last name was. And so she was in the chorus line there. And evidently an executive from Universal Pictures was in the audience one night and was bowled over by her beauty. And legend has it that he signed her right away to a contract with Universal Studios. So that happened very quickly for her.
Yeah.
And so she went into the, into the school there and trained in acting and dancing, singing and things like that. And her first two film jobs were in two Western short films with an actor and singer named Tex Williams. And they're very hard films to come by now, very obscure. They were only 30 minutes each.
Yeah.
They weren't the length of a true film. But she was learning, mm-hmm. All the time. She was studying, but her social life was already pretty wild.
She was in full bloom. I mean, that must be intoxicating if you have that kind of a personality. Perhaps she had, the parents were alcoholics, and there is genetic
right.
stuff there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, when you're gorgeous and young and all these guys are paying attention to you and you're in Hollywood and producers and actors and she just must have been like over the top, like,
oh yeah,
ooh la la.
She must have been knocked sideways from it, because she had people like George Raft and Howard Hughes and Mickey Cohen and John Ireland and billionaires and producers and directors, and all these guys were dating her in 1948 and 49.
Wow. She dated a lot.
I've been doing some new research on her because I'm working on a photo book as a follow-up to the biography. Uh-huh. So I've been going on newspapers.com a lot to do research on her life. And you should see all the news blurbs about her dating in 1948, 49, all the different guys she was dating. It's like an endless stream of names.
Yeah, and I don't think she was just dating them. I think that what she sounds like, I think she was actually, I think she was getting her reputation even then.
She was. Yes, you're right.
Pretty
she
quickly.
Was. Yeah, I feel bad about that, because she had talent. She had acting talent.
I never saw that movie, but she did. Why don't we talk about the first film she got that she actually talked in and was like maybe the fourth birth. I don't remember what film that was.
Trapped with yes. Lloyd Bridges.
Yes.
Yeah, that was an independent film for Eagle Lion Pictures. Mm-hmm. And she had second billing in that. She had only been acting less than 2 years when she got that part. And very unlike, say, Marilyn Monroe, who really struggled, for several years to climb up the ranks. For Barbara, it happened very quickly. But she acquitted herself very well in Trapped.
I think I saw that movie a long time ago. I'm going to have to rewatch. And
She's very good in it, and she's beautiful.
God,
she was 21 when she made it, and she's just absolutely beautiful, and she did a good job.
And allegedly had an affair with Lloyd Bridges. Yes,
right.
The family man. But I heard a lot about Lloyd, that he got around. He got around at the limp. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe Beau Bridges would even tell you that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm sure. But, he was, like Robert Mitchum. He stayed with mommy too, So they did their thing and stayed with mama.
Yeah, but the thing is, they never got the reputation.
No. Well, of course, because it's still the same way, but was a zillion times worse than, just totally. And she was a young girl, gorgeous, life of the party. And so she's seen as
an easy target when you think about it.
But she was like a sitting duck because she let herself so, because she just went with it,
Let's face it, we might as well say it right now. Barbara was her own worst enemy.
Oh,
throughout her entire life.
Gosh.
She was her own worst enemy. To me, that's the saddest part of all. You know, a lot of people have said to me, well, how come you feel sorry for her? How come you feel bad about, you know, what happened to her? She brought it on herself. Yes, she did. But that doesn't make the story any less sad.
No,
it
doesn't.
It's very sad.
It is a sad
story.
The person
would do that to themselves. They would destroy their own life. Is extremely sad.
It is. And she did it herself. It was her whole, it was totally on herself. It was nobody else's fault. And I don't know. I think perhaps, we're getting ahead of ourselves there too, but when does it, so she gets $5,000 a week, right?
Yeah. When she was hired at Warner Brothers in 1950, William Cagney, well, actually, it was a joint contract that she was given with Warner Brothers and William Cagney Productions. William Cagney was the, I guess, younger brother. He might have been the older brother of James Cagney. Mm-hmm. He had started his own production company, or they had started their own production company. And Barbara was the first person they signed to it. So her contract was owned by both entities, and she was given the female lead in Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, a James Cagney crime film in 1950, and she got really good reviews in that film. From that film, she really made a name for herself, and people, the industry thought she was really on her way. So, yeah, she was making quite a lot of money for a neophyte.
Yes, and allegedly, people are saying that she had sex with a Cagney's brother, and that's that, hence, that's how she got the job.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, you can't discount that, that story at all. It's in keeping with so much of the story, of her story. So
I think I missed a part though with her 48 and 49 dating. That's when she was being kept by Bob Hope, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She met him at a party at a hotel in Texas. Universal had sent Barbara out on a publicity tour for a film that she wasn't actually in. She wasn't appearing in this film, but Universal often did that. I guess other studios did as well. Anyway, she was down there on this tour and she met him at a party, and evidently that very same night they got together. And before long, she became sort of his groupie.
Yeah.
He was going around the country doing different events, golf tournaments and things like that. And who would show up but Barbara cheering him on. And she, I guess, had evidently forgotten that she was under contract to Universal, and she should have been back at the studio working and studying. Instead, she was chasing Bob Hope around the country. And when they got back to California, he set her up in an apartment. But from what I hear, he did that a lot over the years with different women.
Yeah, I know. But he was married to Dolores for 80 years. You know, come on. People were shocked when they found out about Bob Hope. But
that poor woman, I guess she didn't want to give up her lifestyle.
Yeah, I guess.
Mrs. Bob Hope.
Yeah.
But I think it's very disrespectful to do what he did to her. I'm not a big Bob Hope fan.
I am not either. I really don't like him. From what I've heard about him, it hasn't been swell, you know?
Right. I've heard he was a really, really mean person.
Yes.
Cruel, cruel person.
And so, I didn't think he was funny either.
No, I don't either.
You know,
no.
So there, Bob.
He had good writers.
Yeah. I liked some of his movies. They were kind of cute, but you know, he was just a little over the top. How long did that last with Barbara?
6 months. And then he dumped her. Yeah, he dumped her pretty abruptly, which pissed her off. And, you know, she got really angry. But she got some revenge on him a few years later.
I've read that. Yeah. Didn't she blackmail him, though? And he said that he had to pay her. He paid her. Somebody said that he paid her $50,000 or something?
something like that. He had to pay her to disappear. Eesh. Because she was going to, you know, blow the whistle on their affair and mm-hmm. tell everyone. I mean, can you imagine something like that coming out in 1949?
No. You know? And look what happened to Ingrid Bergman. You know, she had to stay away.
Out of the country.
I know,
right.
The poor woman. So, no. And, of course, didn't the studio, they did know about this affair, right?
Yeah, they found out about it, and then they fired her.
Yeah, so, her. That's what made me laugh. They fired her. I think that's when she was getting $100 a week, right?
Yeah, she wasn't making much at Universal. Mm-hmm. They fired her because, by going after Bob Hope that way, she was going against the morals clause.
And what was he? Yeah, he was just fine and dandy.
You know? Oh, yeah, right. He got away with murder.
Yeah, but he was also, you know, the moneymaker. He made films. He made a lot of things. And he was also the man. So we know.
He was a huge star, right?
Humongous. So she would, but you know, I just don't get the blackmailing aspect of Barbara either. She is so she just did a lot of things that weren't nice.
Right.
He wasn't nice, but
yeah.
Come on.
I mean, I have to be honest. There are a lot of things Barbara did that I don't approve of. You know, it was difficult to write her story because there were many times I just shook my head and I'm like, well, how do I try to present her in a positive light?
Or not so negative or not so negative.
Yeah. But the thing is, I understand Barbara.
Yeah.
I don't condone a lot of the things she did, but I understand a lot of what she did and why she did these things. And so I think once you understand a situation, you know, it just makes it better.
I have empathy for her, don't get me wrong.
I do too.
Because like it was just she was like a tornado, you know, and
right.
her it just was one day after another. And in the beginning, it seemed like she got a kick out of it, you know, that she loved the attention. She was, you know, any of this stuff. She just loved it.
See, that's what I meant before when I said she felt her power.
Yeah.
And I mean, she, you know, people have to remember she was very young when all this stuff was going on, 21, 22, 23. She was gorgeous. She was on her way up. She was making a lot of money. So, man, she must have felt omnipotent.
She must have. And the thing is, it all came really relatively easy for her. So I think she thought anything she did, it would just, like you said before, it would just continue because it was so easy for her.
Yeah, she was very delusional, very self-deluded.
I would think so. So when did all this start with the Franco and Tom Neal? That is such, what a story.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah,
this is a movie, people. HBO, get this book.
I hope you will keep repeating that throughout
HBO,
our interview.
HBO, movie.
I have signed an option with a producer over the summer. I signed an option, my fourth one.
I know this book. I don't get it. You know, I'm reading this book, and I'm like, all of a sudden, Cecil B. DeMille. I'm directing it. I can see everything going. It brings out the inner. Everything in me. This is such a great tragic story, and I don't know why it's not being told.
I mean, I honestly believe it's cinematic. I mean, it's all there. You know,
oh my God,
her story. It's just it would go on the screen so well. But for whatever reason, there seems to be a resistance to it. I'm just hoping that this new option will be the one that sticks.
Well, my fingers are crossed for you because I think they're very wrong. I don't know why they would think that this would not make some kind of movie because, you know, okay, we get that, the crashes and the science fiction and these superhero people. But this is a real story with blood, guts, love, hate, everything. And a tragic story, but interesting story that deserves to be told. I think, you know, this is a lot of people don't know Barbara Payton, but, you know, a lot of people bought your book. A lot of people know her just via, I don't know, word of mouth, because who really knows her? I didn't before I read a little article about her, and then I got your book.
But, well, I think, like, B-movie fans, fans of classic Hollywood, you know.
Because,
let's face it, her acting career didn't amount to much. It only lasted for, like, 7 years, and she made less than 15 films.
Yeah.
So
she was too busy partying.
She was. Oh, yeah. She was born in the wrong place and time. Well, not the wrong place. I mean, she would, if she lived now, I mean, she'd be all over the news, she would be applauded.
I wonder.
Almost applauded for her behavior or encouraged.
Well, but, definitely they go that way. But look at someone like a Lindsay Lohan or anything. She also, she became pariah because of her behavior. So, people put up with a certain amount of stuff and then because they want to read about it and it's like juicy. And then they're like, okay, enough.
But, you know, the thing with Lindsay Lohan is she seems to really have turned her life around. And I really applaud her for that.
I hope she did. I really do.
I really hope she did, because for her own health, for her own life.
God, I know.
I saw a recent interview she did, and she really seemed together. So she's been given a lot of help and a lot of assistance, and I think that's great.
I do, too.
I think we should be able to make as many mistakes as we have to make to get our lives right.
Well, I agree. And just imagine doing it in the public eye, you know, make mistake after mistake after mistake. People generally love a comeback. They love when something bad happens and the person is redeemed. They love that kind of a story. Unfortunately, it didn't happen with Barbara. That was not the story.
Have you
heard anything when you've optioned the book before, why people, making this film?
Yes. A female producer actually optioned the book a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she tried for a while to get interest in the story.
Yeah.
And then she told me a lot of people in the industry told her that they couldn't get behind Barbara because of, and this is what they said, she was an awful mother to her son.
Yeah.
And they couldn't see how they could show her to be a worthwhile person if she had been so she just didn't give her son the environment that he needed to grow up, you know, healthy.
Well, they did Mommy Dearest, didn't they? But I guess that was because it was Joan Crawford. Or, you know, they make the most horrible movies about horrible people. And this is real. And, I don't know. It just seems surprising because there's so many miniseries or series now that are 10 episodes and there are so many repulsive characters in it. I don't really know why this... You know what I mean? I don't know why this wouldn't hit, but I'm saying I think it'd be perfect for HBO.
I would like to see it on HBO as well, rather than as a feature film, because I think the miniseries would be the perfect format for her story.
Yes.
Because that way, they could really take their time laying out the story, and all these like ancillary characters could really, because she knew so many offbeat and outrageous people. I think the audience would love to see these strange people who populated Barbara's world.
Yes. And see that really get, because you can't capture it in a 90-minute film or an hour and 45 or two, because you want to show how she comes to Hollywood, fresh-faced, gorgeous, her fun times, the Francho and Tom thing, and then that horrific decline into the black hole. And that you can't do that in 90 minutes or 2 hours.
No, because it was a long decline.
Yes. And, God.
It happened in stages.
Yeesh.
And things just went from bad to worse.
Okay, can we talk? Let's get back to the Francho
story.
I went off it too because, like I said, I read it today, so it's so fresh in my brain, everything. And so I'm scattered a little myself, so I'm sorry. I'm not exactly sticking to the program either.
That's all right. She met Francho Tone in 1950 at a nightclub on the Sunset Strip. The story goes that she was there in a she was appearing in a Charleston contest, and he was one of the judges, and evidently she won the contest that night, and they got together. And by this time, of course, he had long been divorced from Joan Crawford. Mm-hmm. And I think he was also divorced from his second wife, Jean Wallace.
Yes, who he had two children with, right?
Right, two sons, and they had quite a contentious relationship, Franco and Jean Wallace. But anyway, Franco and Barbara began dating, and, you know, he was quite wealthy, quite prominent in the industry.
I loved him. Yeah, I like him as an actor. I really do.
Oh, yeah, a very memorable and a very classy, classy guy. I mean, evidently he had a lot of problems too that, you know, kind of came out later on. But he was an alcoholic as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that wasn't the best move for either of them to get along with the other.
Yes.
But they began dating, and they became engaged. And then he was away on a business trip when she was making a film called Bride of the Gorilla. And she met Tom Neal at a pool party in Hollywood, and evidently she completely forgot that she was engaged to Franco, and she began seeing Tom Neal. Tom Neal was a B-movie actor.
I know him from Detour.
That's right. That's a classic.
Oh, my. The meanest noir dame ever. In Detour.
Anne Savage.
Oh, she was. She was so repulsive. They're talking about a repulsive character. That was a repulsive character.
What an excellent actress. Wow.
Yes. And he was very good in that film. And
he was.
Barbara, I don't know, I read somewhere in your book that there was some magazine or whatever, and they said that Barbara loved his bulge. Barbara was checking out that bulge. So,
well, you know, I could see her saying that. Well, you know, she was nothing if not honest.
That's for sure. But she was, didn't she have a thing with Guy Madison? Wasn't that before Franco was? Franco got her an apartment, set her up. But then he heard all this stuff about her cheating on him, and he got an apartment across the way. He had private investigators. And one day he was watching, and he saw her and Guy Madison go up to her apartment, waited a few.
He evidently found them in bed together.
You know, come on. He really forgave her a lot of stuff. And then after that, she meets Tom Neal. He's away, and Tom is staying in the place that Franco is paying for.
Yeah, that's right. He was there lifting barbells.
And
he was on the patio sunbathing, topless, you know, topless sunbathing.
And, with his bulge.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's cinematic right there, isn't it?
It just, you can see it. You can see this guy, you know, with his greased back hair, white teeth, with his barbells, you know, and Barbara watching him and, you know, watching his bulge. And, you can see it. I can see it so clearly.
But not only that, you know, she had this tendency to put fake tattoos on her face.
Ugh.
Can't you kind of see that as well? You know, her lying there sunbathing with these tattoos on her face.
That was so weird. Also, I heard that they would put whiskers on and stuff like that. Oh, pretend they were cats.
Yeah. Yep. That's right.
Wow.
Well, I guess they had a very healthy love life.
Well, she seemed. Yeah. I mean, like, people. I'm reading the end of the book and what people said after she died, and so many people just hated her guts and called her, you know, the nympho and this and that. And there were some people with some compassion for her. But Barbara, I mean, sex drove her. It just, and I wonder if she even really liked it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Someone I interviewed for the book, the late journalist Will Fowler, told me that when he interviewed Barbara at one time, she had confessed to him that she never enjoyed sex, and actually she could take it or leave it. So I find that extremely fascinating.
It is, considering she took it and took it and took it, and she just didn't seem to know how to leave it.
It makes me realize that Barbara was emotionally ill.
She was definitely ill.
Absolutely emotionally ill.
In those days, they didn't deal with well, you know, as in, they used to put nymphomaniacs, quote unquote, right, into mental hospitals because it was thought to be a disease. You call it sex addiction. Some people don't think it exists. I do.
I do too. Yeah, I do too.
I know a lot of
people use that line now.
Yes,
that, you know,
as an excuse to get out of trouble. I agree.
Right.
Powerful guys, like the ones who, you know, who just got caught and things like that.
Yeah,
but
right,
there are the lesser known guys who sit there, or women, and they have such unhealth. It's just not natural. I didn't believe there was sex addiction until I met one. And it's, you know, it's like not good. It's truly an addiction.
Yeah, I can't even wrap my head around it, but, you know, I feel bad for anyone who struggles with any kind of disease.
Yes.
Or, you know,
for real.
And when it's real, you know, it has to be a horrible thing to endure. But can I say this about Barbara? You know, I'm saying all these bad things about her, but, you know, she had a lot of good qualities too.
Oh, I read them. She was fun and gregarious. She could cook.
Mm. Yeah, she could cook. She was a gourmet cook. She was interested in interior design. She was very generous with her money and
yes,
with gifts.
Too generous. I know that kind of a person that gets the dough and lets it go. Yeah. That's like me.
Well, also, I have to say, Barbara's, this is sad news, Barbara's best friend and sister-in-law, Jan Redfield, passed away this week.
Oh, she was so nice. What a wonderful woman she was. I loved her.
A lovely woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, the book I would have never been able to write the book without Jan Redfield's help.
She was, she really was really great.
She helped introduce, she introduced the real Barbara to me, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And she was the first person who showed me these positive qualities about Barbara that had never really surfaced before. So I owe her so much, and she was a lovely woman. In fact, we were so close, she asked me to call her Aunt Jan.
Oh, how sweet.
She was a wonderful lady, and she loved Barbara, and she always loved her.
Yes, you could tell that from the book very clearly.
I'm going to miss her friendship a lot.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. How old was she?
Thank you. 84.
God bless. She was a good friend to Barbara, that's for sure. She was
an angel on earth to Barbara.
Yes, she really was. And I think Barbara knew that as well. So.
Oh, she did, yeah.
So with this thing, the Tom and Fran show, we're getting back to them because that's the middle of the story. Francho is gone. Then he comes in. Oh, then Barbara, when he comes back, dumps Tom Neal, right? And she goes back with Francho.
But that happened a few times. Mm-hmm. It was like a ping pong match. It was just back and forth, back and forth.
And then the night, the big old night of that brawl. What? Francho walked in. Oh, Barbara and Francho walked in, and Tom Neal was there. Wasn't that it?
Yeah, but the thing is, she was supposed to marry Tom Neal the very next day.
Oh, my God.
she dumped him on the night, you know, before their wedding.
Aye,
and
aye.
Now with Francho Tone, they went to all the nightclubs on the Sunset Strip. Then she brought him back to her house where Tom was living with her. And he had a party going on, and he was drunk. And he and Francho exchanged words, mm-hmm. and Tom Neal beat the crap out of Francho.
Literally rearranged his face, pretty much, because he had plastic surgery.
Yeah, he beat him severely.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Yeah. And then
he was in a coma for a while. They said, you know, there were reports that he was near death and things like that, but he did recover.
And he went back with Barbara.
He did. Right. And then she dumped him again and went back to Tom. You know, I kind of hesitate when I say all these things about Barbara. I mean, they're all true. But people out there must think, God, she was just worthless.
And no, you know, I don't want people to think that.
I hope people have more foresight, you know. And
we are complex, all of us. You know, I can't imagine doing those things, but that was her. We're all different. And like I said, I don't approve of a lot of the things that she did, but I do have empathy.
Either.
And I think a lot of people do. But, you know, you can also say you know, she did it to herself. She put right. herself there. And so then she eventually married him, Francho.
Exactly.
That lasted how long?
Well, maybe 2 months or less. I can't remember the exact number of days, but it didn't last long. And then she went back to Tom.
Yes.
And then they went to England. She couldn't get work here anymore mm-hmm. because of all the bad publicity that happened after the brawl. So she went to England. She did 2 B films there, and Tom Neal followed her over there. And they evidently fought a lot over there and drank a lot. And he found her, you know, in the arms of another guy and allegedly beat the guy up. No, threw the guy out of the apartment and beat Barbara up.
Mm-hmm. And she said she liked it.
I know. That's what makes me say she was emotionally ill.
Obviously, you know? She had
severe problems.
Yeah. Yeah, because she did need help, but she... Yeah, so we get there. And so Francho finally decides enough is enough. I don't remember what was his final thing, but he...
You know what it was, Grace? She and Francho were staying at a hotel in New York City, and he found her talking to Tom Neal on the telephone. Mm-hmm. So he just flipped out and you know, got into it with Barbara, and evidently she ran into the bathroom and took an overdose of sleeping pills. And she had to have her stomach pumped. Mm-hmm. And that was, I guess, the last straw for Francho Tone. And you know, after that, he decided he didn't want to be with her anymore.
And he stuck to it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like some people, you know, they just, they're not healthy, so they end up bringing you down as well. You know?
That's right. And he wasn't healthy either. You know, he was an alcoholic.
Well, I've heard a lot of stuff about him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard a lot of things about him. Like, he was masochistic.
Oh, yes. I heard that's why he liked Barbara so much. He was sort of addicted to her back and forth because she was
weird. I think he had weird sexual problems. And,
yeah, you know, I read it. You were nice. You didn't really go into it in the book. But, yeah, I've heard it. So, you know,
You know what? There were other things I didn't go into in the book. Because they were just so, I hate to say it, but really disgusting.
Well, I read one of the disgusting things with Frank.
I had to pull the plug, you know, I had to pull the plug somewhere. I couldn't do it.
I thought
what I wrote was hurtful enough to her family, although they did understand that I wanted to write a balanced you know, look at her life.
You were not cruel at all in that book.
Oh, thank you.
I did not feel, you know, that you were coming from it in a hate space or you couldn't stand her. You were very respectful, I thought. And especially because you had the cooperation of her son and the lovely woman that died this week. And even her ex-husband, the first.
Yes.
Maybe the fifth husband, who was the second or third husband, John's dad.
Well, John Payton, yeah. And then Tony Provost, her last husband, he gave me quite a lot of information about their marriage.
What did you think of him?
Well, he was very tight-lipped, very tentative. You know, I always felt like I was pulling teeth with him, and he didn't entirely trust me. So we both did the best we could. Uh-huh. But yeah, I've heard that he has since passed away as well. So John Payton, Barbara's son, loathed Tony Provost.
Yes. So I think maybe that's why he was, because I remember reading in the book that you had said that the kid hated him at first sight. And he said, that's not true. I was so good to him, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and I gave both sides, but yeah. I don't know where the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, you never know. He was a child. And anyway, so she ends up marrying Tom Neal, right?
No, she didn't marry him.
They never married?
No, she and Tom Neal never married. They just lived together. You know, I'm sure that didn't go over too well in 1950s Hollywood. But no, they lived together openly. But then by 1953, they parted ways as well. That's when Barbara really seemed to go off the the charts. I mean, her behavior became very off the wall and reckless, and she was able to get a really nice home in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. I guess she had she still had enough money at that point, so she rented a beautiful home right near the Beverly Hills Hotel, and evidently went on to throw a lot of parties there.
Her son was there as well. Her little boy.
Right, he witnessed a lot of the stuff that went on there, and it was pretty bad.
And she also left him alone for days at a time. So
that's right.
You know how it is with these kids. They just, and he adores his mother, yet, you know. Yes, I know she loved him, but she was a crappy mother. You know,
she
gave him a lot of, and, you know, leaving him alone. And, you know, he said he saw all kinds of sex and everything, you know, by the time he was 8 years old.
Yeah, it's unconscionable. But yeah, he loves her to this day. He's remained loyal to her memory.
Yes.
And he absolutely stresses that she was always loving and affectionate. She put a lot of affection on him and treated him well, and never verbally abused him. So I don't know what to say about the other things. It's really bad, you know, is really bad on her part to be so remiss.
And why didn't the dad or anybody else know that she was doing this and leaving him alone for days at a time and you know, basically being Party Central House, there was the pool, there was everything. And nobody tried to even, why didn't the dad at that point try to take the kid?
That's when he did. I think the family tried to keep that from John Payton for a long time. But then when he finally found out about it, he said, oh, you know, I've got to get my son out of that environment. And that's when, you know, they went to court, and John Lee at 9 years old was sent to live with his dad and his new wife, because John Payton had remarried by then. So Barbara lost custody of her son in 1956.
And that was the last time he had ever seen his mother, too, right?
Yes,
when they left, he never saw his mother again.
Right. They never saw each other again. She was given supervised visitation rights, but the family worked it out so that she was never able to see him, which apparently destroyed her. According to Jan Redfield, Barbara just lost herself in the bottle even, you know, deeper after that.
Yeah, so there's some guy that she lived with. What was his name? His name was Bolo. He was an artist or something. And didn't he try to...
Budo.
And he tried to stab the little boy, right? He tried to kill the little boy.
Yeah, he was a black artist who moved in with Barbara. He made, according to John Lee Payton, Budo made mobiles, and he was an artist. And he had mental problems. And one day he chased Barbara's son through the house with a knife, and then proceeded to lock himself in their attic, Barbara's attic, and stay there for a few days until the police finally came and took him away. I mean, my God, you can't make stuff like that.
No, you can't. The artist. And she just sort of, what about the time? What was this one? The 6 football players?
Oh, yeah.
She did Bride of the Gorilla, right? And she was promoting it in New York. And she was with somebody, I think.
She was with Tom Neal. Mm-hmm. And she was on a promotional tour for Bride of the Gorilla, and she left Tom in the apartment one night, or the hotel room. Mm-hmm. And according to her in her memoir, she met 6 cowboys on the streets in New York City. They were evidently in town for a rodeo at Madison Square Garden. And so they took off. She took off with these 6 cowboys, and she went back to their hotel room, and they had this wild party, trashed the place, and a few of the guys were arrested. And she evidently enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, I think the thing was she had them fighting for her favor, who was going to win her, and then the guys trashed her. And and said, don't go see the gorilla lady, the movie, and things like that. They trashed her because she loved it. She was having a grand old time watching them, you know, beating each other up over her.
Doesn't it sound like a black comedy?
It does, parts of it. It's.
I mean, it's not a funny story, but there are little anecdotes and segments of this story that are so perverse and like dark, but like a black comedy. Like it's, yeah. I guess if they ever do the film, they would have to put all that in there, you know, to really make it, to really flesh out the story.
Yes. Well, she did a nice thing for Bride of the Gorilla. Allegedly, Raymond Burr, they weren't going to cast him because they said he was too fat. Right. And he asked Barbara to help him get the part. And
that's right.
She did. So she did.
And he fasted for several days, and he was able to lose a lot of weight. I think he went on a water diet. And so he fasted off the excess weight, and he got the job.
He was that gorilla.
Yeah, he turned into a gorilla. Well, no, he thought he turned into a gorilla. You have to see the film. Have you seen the film?
I did. I know it's on YouTube, so I think I'm going to watch it tonight.
It's a B movie for sure, but if you look at her acting, I don't think she did a bad job at all. You know, I think her acting's pretty good in that.
And she was still beautiful gorgeous. There.
Oh, yeah.
And, but she also, you know, I think she was delusional to the point where when she went to Mexico for all that time and then she wanted to come back, or when she went to certain places and you know, got, you know, she's just on her drinking hashes and she said, I'm going to come back to Hollywood and I'm going to make my comeback. Very Norma Desmond, but not Norma Desmond.
And
you know, she didn't. And then you say she went into... There was a friend of hers that was like a B-movie actress as well that moved to Chicago.
Lila Leeds, right.
Yes. And she started hooking there, like a high-class call girl or something.
Yeah, that's right. Out of the Drake Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
She knew Lila Leeds from the nightclubs in Hollywood in the late 40s. They palled around a lot. Lila Leeds was arrested with Robert Mitchum
In
1948.
The marijuana,
That's right. So she actually had to leave the state of California for a few years.
He didn't. Isn't that amazing?
No, he didn't.
So wrong. How awful.
It was, pretty bad for women back then. Very bad.
You know, geez. Yeah, that was also the McCarthy era coming up, and just everything. And
I mean, what did they think? These women were going to bring down the entire country?
I know.
You know, I mean, they were reckless in their personal lives, but they weren't out there murdering people.
No, and they weren't actively hurting people. They were hurting themselves, if anything.
Exactly.
And I don't know. It just wasn't fair. That sure wasn't fair. Barbara went to Chicago for a little while and prostituted herself there, right?
Right. She was 29.
Jeez.
And she was doing that for a while. And then Lila Leeds was arrested, but somehow Barbara had pulled out of the enterprise in time and had moved back to Hollywood. She was still married to Tony Provost, but I think their marriage by that point was in name only.
Yeah.
She stayed in Hollywood, Grace. To me, that is one of the most haunting parts of her story. She stayed in Hollywood long after there was any chance of her making it back into films.
No, and they kind of like made fun of her because she would throw press conferences saying, and nobody cared. Like a couple people would show up and she'd say, I'm making my big return to movies. And she had only really made a few. Her headlines were all, you know, scandal. Yeah. It was all scandal. Yeah. And then the thing she did, that in the book you said that she thought that this would help her get back in the business, is selling the Bob Hope story to that Scandal. What's the Scandal rag?
Confidential
for a grand. And she thought that would help her get back in the business.
You can imagine how pissed off he was.
You know, what was she thinking? I mean, she wasn't thinking.
She was delusional.
Yeah.
Poor Barbara was delusional, and she was addicted to alcohol, so she struggled with that disease. But she had a lot of mental problems.
Ooh, she had to have.
But yeah, she did that, and it didn't get her anywhere, you know. And there were no new films offered to her.
Then when did it happen, like the real start of her decline?
I would say late 1950s, because she was more or less penniless by then. She decided to leave Tony Provost, and actually, she divorced him in 58. They remarried, and then she divorced him again in the early 60s. And I actually found that out after I wrote the book. Mm-hmm. So he didn't even tell me that. You know, he didn't even admit that to me, but I did find out that that's true. And by that time, she was in Hollywood, and, you know, she was penniless. She was destitute. So she turned to life on the streets.
But, you know, it's amazing. Did they try to help her? Did anyone try to help her?
Family intermittently offered help, but they all told me she was very resistant to accepting help from anyone. I think that's part of her delusion. She thought she could do, you know, make it back on her own. But then there's the other school of thought that said she kind of liked that life. Maybe she felt she deserved it because she had messed up so badly. I don't think she ever thought much of herself. I mean, I know I said she felt her power and all.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you really have great self. You can be
right.
You can feel your beauty, but you can also feel like crap about yourself.
That's right.
You know?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Exactly.
They don't go hand in hand all the time.
Right, right. So, and I think her self-hatred just worsened over the years, especially as she started doing more degrading things.
The prostitution.
Her life became depraved. I mean, really. You
yes.
know, I don't think I'm overstating it.
No, it was.
By using that word.
No.
It became depraved.
And she was like on, you know, she got stabbed and she just nonchalantly told you, yeah, well, the guy, you know, she was having, he was, she was, I don't know, she was.
Well, she said he got mad at her because she wouldn't do what he wanted. And then she said, I guess I got to be more careful in the future.
Yeah, it was so nonchalant. Like, she just, right. like, got, you know, he just sort of, like, smacked her on the butt or something. But,
yeah, and she required a lot of stitches and to that stab wound. And Jan Redfield saw the stab wound, and she said it looked horrible. And she was like, Jan said she was horrified by it. And Barbara was very nonchalant, blasé about it.
You sort of think you must kind of be dead yourself. At that point, yeah. You're like, you're the walking dead.
That's right. John Gilmore once, the late author John Gilmore once said that. He said he felt that Barbara was the walking dead.
Yeah, well, it sure sounds it. That she was just kind of existing, keeping up with the booze, having sex. Like the last guy she lived with, he was an actor too, but he was like this debauched character. He was, they lived together and they're, I don't know, cockroaches and nothing. And they would have sex all the time and drink and have sex and drink. And she also had pimps. And then she said she would only have sex with black men because right. they're the only, white men didn't want her anymore.
Right. And, right. Barbara gained a lot of weight.
Oh boy.
And then over time she lost several of her teeth.
Oof.
And it's horrifying.
You see her face, how bloated it is, and she's this young woman. And then you see, when
she looked much older, actually, because of all her illnesses, she looked much older than her years.
Well, the drinking all the time, and they said she was like nonstop. It was sex and drinking.
Yeah, and then she took up drugs as well, heroin and things like that.
Ugh, but you know. She hung on, and it was such a long time she was on the streets. I mean, it was like, please let her go home and die already. You know, this is too long.
When she would go home to her parents, by that time they were living in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
and they lived in a beautiful house there. It was really beautiful, and her father was very handy around the house, and he made it into a show place. But every time she would go back there, the three of them would get drunk together.
Yeah.
And then before long, she and her father would engage in these marathon arguments, and then she would leave again. She would take off for Hollywood and, you know,
or for Sunset, or what do you call it? Skid Row, really.
Yeah,
literally, Skid Row. And she would be seeing one of the most pathetic pictures I've ever seen is the one when the book, I'm Not Ashamed, you know, they take photos for it, and she's in this scuzzy place, laying on a couch with like this bra, I guess, and she is bloated and unrecognizable as Barbara.
She has like a feather boa, or some kind of boa around her neck.
Yes,
and you could see that the top of her dress had been like pulled down.
Yeah,
and then she's got that black bra on, and but the look on her face was chilling.
Yes, it was.
Because you could tell she just didn't know what she was doing. That is so pitiful. That is just so pathetic.
But, you know, they were bloodsuckers, you know, because they, you know, they were giving her. Did she think that she was going to have a comeback after that book?
That's what she was hoping for.
And, you know, and she didn't have. And then the bad checks were a while, long before. I think she lost her teeth, but they got her for that. She just, boy, oh boy.
She had many arrests, not only for prostitution, but for drunken disorderly conduct, public drunkenness, shoplifting. In fact, in this photo book that I'm working on right now, the follow-up to the biography, I have a copy of her mugshots, actually two of them from her arrests. And in one of them, she's got this big smile on her face.
Does she still have her teeth?
Yeah. She still has her teeth, but she looked happy that she had been arrested.
Maybe she got some food and sleep. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
But you read the horrible things about people seeing her, and they said she was filthy. She had bites all over her, that they, you know, her clothes were ragged and her hair smelled, and she was just really disgusting.
Yes.
And
that's right.
You know, she just went into that total, like,
Well, you know, the thing is, when I think of Hollywood's most tragic stories, I think of Sharon Tate.
Yes.
And I think of, you know, Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia.
Oh, my gosh.
And other innocent people.
Yeah.
But, you know, Barbara's story is tragic. She did it to herself. You know, most of her problems, I would say 99.9.
Yes, she brought it to herself.
Right. But it's still sad.
It is still sad.
That a person would have that much self-loathing, that they would make such a protracted effort to destroy their own life. She was adamant. It seemed like she was adamant about destroying her life, which just like boggles the mind, you know. What? How could someone hate themselves that much to put themselves through that extended torture? Because really, it was torture.
It was torture for me to read that she was still going through torture. I'm reading it. I'm like, oh no. Because I forgot how long she went through all this torture. And, you know, I'm hearing drilling because they're doing work in the building and I'm wearing these block out headphones, but I still hear. And then I'm reading all this horrible stuff about Barbara. Oh my God.
It blows your mind. It really blows your mind.
Because I don't know that anyone had quite a fall like she did.
I can't think of anyone.
Yeah.
I know Frances Farmer had a terrible life, and she was put into a mental asylum, and she had shock treatments, and I don't know of anyone else off the top of my head.
I know.
That had, you know, that had like the long time on Skid Row. I don't know.
I know that, what's her name? Veronica Lake. She became a bartender and really grossly obese.
Right.
And she died very young as well. So she went down the tubes.
Yes.
But nobody did it like Barbara. I mean, it was.
Long and long.
Oh, God.
No, I think she has the market cornered, and, you know, on that. Because she just, it, when you think you've read, hello?
Hi, I'm here.
Okay. When you think you've read like the worst thing you could read about her, then something else happens that's even worse.
That sort of sounds like our country today. You know, we wake up. What's going on? Oh, no, not this.
You are so right.
Isn't it? It's so horrible, but it was like the book. I'm going to have to watch something really sweet tonight to make my head not dream about this poor lady. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes, I have empathy. I thought she was a rotten mother. I thought she did it to herself. But it was pitiful and horrifying and sad.
Yes.
So, you know, though you can.
Thank you for seeing that.
I do.
Some people don't see that. They stop at, well, she was a horrible person. They stop at that point. But I'm just asking people to maybe, you know, try to have some empathy for her. Try to understand that she couldn't have liked herself.
Ugh. Who would?
She couldn't have respected herself.
That degenerate lifestyle. The thing I know, and I understand the deal that people are upset about the son, because that made me so angry. And I'm just thinking of this little boy, this precious little boy who adores his mother, but he's going through all this crap. Where is he now? Yeah. He was very good. He was really helpful with the book. It was a nice guy, huh?
Yeah, very nice. He and his wife live in the Midwest. He's retired. And he's 70. He'll be 71 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't spoken to him in a while, but, you know, he was very helpful. And once he understood what I wanted to do for Barbara with the book, he came on board. At first, he resisted it. He really did.
Well, he thought you were going to do like a total slasher job.
Rip her to shreds. Yeah. And I didn't want to do that. You know,
she ripped herself to shreds. You didn't rip her to shreds. She ripped herself to shreds, and you reported on what she did to herself.
But, you know, that's where Jan Redfield really helped, because she was the one who convinced her nephew, John Lee Payton, to talk to me and to help me. So I really, that's why I owe her so much.
Yes, and it's so sad. And she called it Aunt Jan. She really, I liked her just reading what she talked to you. You could tell she was a very, very good woman.
A
very loving woman and a very loyal person. And I'm curious, did her brother's name was Frank, right?
That's right.
Was he an alcoholic or did he skip that? He was one as well, huh?
Yeah, he was an alcoholic as well. When I interviewed him, he said he had... He was in, I don't want to say remission. That's not it. What's the right term?
Recovery.
That he had been in recovery for many years.
Oh, that's so great. But that he didn't escape that. And so I was wondering.
No, he didn't. No, he said actually it was very bad. He had a very bad, time with alcoholism in the 50s. So a lot of times he said, you know, they would all be together at the house and the only sober person would be Aunt Jan.
Watching the whole thing go on. Okay, so why don't we get to, we should wrap up pretty soon. We've been going on for over an hour. Barbara's Last Day.
I have to say, I've really, really enjoyed this with you.
Well, so
thank
have I.
You so much.
I have looked forward to talking to you ever since I read a book. And I said, once I start this podcast, I got to ask him to be my guest.
You make it so easy to talk about Barbara.
Well, thank you.
You make it so easy. So I really appreciate that.
No, you're great. You're great. I'm great.
Thank you.
We're both great. I'm kissing myself right now. Mwah, 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 mwah. I'm sending a kiss to you. Mwah, 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 mwah.
Oh, thank you. I receive it and I send one back to you.
My cat's looking at me like, what are you talking about? You know, he thinks I'm talking to him. He's like, what are you doing? Anyway, so let's get to Barbara's, the final frontier in Barbara's life.
Okay. So that's mid-1960s. She was really down and out, living on Skid Row, often homeless. She would take refuge frequently in a public library. Isn't that sad?
Yes.
So she would take refuge there, and sometimes she would go to an all-night movie theater And, you know,
that's what homeless people do today. And, you know, you just never know who you're looking at. You don't know what led this person to the street. You know, people looked at Barbara and had no clue. No clue.
I have a great empathy for the homeless.
I do too.
I think it's easier now than ever to become homeless.
And people are one paycheck away a lot of times, one paycheck.
That's right.
And there seems to be less empathy for people today. And I think, you know, we got to be a little kinder and a little empathetic.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. That's why I sometimes dread going on the internet, because people are so primed for attack. I hate that. I don't want any part of that.
I don't either. And I don't like, you know, if somebody says something negative or something, I just I don't pay attention to it. Because
don't engage them.
You can't
engage
them because it's just.
Rise above it.
They're angry people. They don't know you. And, you know, when I was a kid, I could never have taken it. But now, you know, I've done podcasts. I've had people call me terrible names. Generally, I've been very lucky. But, you know, I don't engage them. And if they don't.
There's something really sick about being so fervent in attacking someone you don't even know. You don't know them. You don't know they could be struggling with cancer.
I know. They could be broke. They could be, I don't know, anything. You just don't know these people. And people get so brave and people think, you know, it's just.
It's sick.
It is sick. Yeah, so we won't engage anyone who says anything mean about us. Mm-hmm. So there. No. So you better not.
Well, you should see some of the emails I've gotten about Barbara. Talk about depraved. Wow. There's something about Barbara's story that, like, the sickest people out there decide to write to me and tell me what they think of her. And, wow, these are the people who really need help.
What do you mean? They're just, like, saying she's a scuzz or something?
But yeah, they use every filthy, dirty word about her, you know, in the book. I mean, just horrible. So I delete those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, move on.
You do, because it's ridiculous. And, you know, it's not your fault what Barbara was. You're just reporting what Barbara was. And,
right.
And
someone said I deserve to go to hell for writing about her.
Yeah, I can.
Wow. Yeah. When I read that, I'm like, wow, this poor, sick person.
God, you know? I guess we're all destined for hell if that's a person's thing, thinking, oh, God, that's awful.
That's what they wrote. Yeah. And he said, I deserve to go to hell, and I'm sure she'll welcome me there when I arrive.
God, there are so many really mean people in the world. Don't be so mean. I just don't like mean. I just don't like
either.
To hurt anybody, you know?
It's not how I was raised.
Me either.
I was
either.
Raised by very, very fine parents. And, you know, I would never, I mean, they're both gone now, but I would never respond to these people because I feel I would really be disrespecting my folks.
And yourself.
And myself, and I don't want to do that.
You don't have to, and just delete, but I can't believe that. That's really gross. But I can believe it, too, you know, but I can't believe it. Okay, so let's get to Barbara's last days.
Right. Well, she evidently was, you know, living on Skid Row, and one morning in February 1967, she was found passed out beneath a garbage dumpster on the Sunset Strip. And when the maintenance workers or the garbage men came to empty the dumpster, at first they thought she was a bag of trash. They didn't even realize that this was, you know, a human being lying on the ground. And she was beaten and black. She had a black eye. It turns out she had passed out there. She hadn't been beaten up, but I guess the bruises were from, you know, past beatings. So anyway, she was so badly ill, so severely ill, she was brought to a hospital, and she stayed there for a while. And then a social worker brought her home to Barbara's parents to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And so Barbara went to stay with them, and of course they were no help. The drinking, the nonstop drinking continued, the arguing and fighting continued, and then a few weeks before Barbara passed away, she was involved in an automobile accident with her mother. Barbara drove her dad's car into a parked car, and she suffered some injuries from that.
Internal injuries?
Internal injuries, mm-hmm. Yeah. She never went to, she never sought medical help for that. And then just she became very depressed. She spent her days in a darkened bedroom watching black and white cartoons on the TV. And yeah, Aunt Jan Redfield said that was just heartbreaking to witness. She said she just saw Barbara fade away more, you know, each day. And then one morning in May 1967, Barbara was lying on the couch, and she got up. She said she didn't feel well. She stumbled into the bathroom, and that's where she passed away. She died in the bathroom on the toilet. Yeah, that's where they found her.
Poor Barbara. And finally, yeah, she could be at peace. Finally.
Yeah, she died of heart and liver failure. She was 39. And when the police came, first off, they didn't recognize her. But why would they? You know, she hadn't been an actress for 12 years.
Yes.
And she looked so different. But one of the officers said he thought she was a woman. This was a woman in her 60s. And she was only 39.
It's so sad. And they said her legs turned black pretty quickly right after her death. And oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so uplifting. I know, but that's a true story. And this is a thing. It's tragic. It's so tragic.
I hope I haven't like depressed everyone who's heard that.
No, it's just a story. And it's tragic. And it's interesting. It's a true story. And it's a fascinating story. And it is a sad story. And it will make you angry. It will make you sad. It will make you sick. It will make you a lot of things. And, you know, but
Hoping, like, if they could make a movie, you remember the monster movie with Charlize Theron?
Yes.
Where she played, what was her name?
Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. serial killer. I mean, you know, maybe there is room for Barbara's project.
Oh, she's not Eileen Wuornos. I think there is room for her project. And especially if you see stuff put on TV. I think it's, you know, today.
Yeah.
Come on, kids. HBO, wake up. It will be a great story. It is compelling.
I think
compelling.
A lot of the people who watched Feud, you know, the Joan Crawford
movie. Oh, I loved it. Oh, my God.
I think they would watch Barbara's
definitely
film too. You know,
yes. I mean, they weren't exactly peppy, cheery lifestyle that we were watching here, you know.
Yeah, right.
I'm Team Joan, by the way. I hate to say it. I know people always say they're Team Betty.
Oh, wow.
I'm Team Joan.
She hated Barbara.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, she was protective of Francho. You know, at first, when I read in your book, she said, who's that lovely girl? Because she came to the table or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, would you like her if you know, she was, you still had fond feelings for your ex-husband and he's with this young woman? You know, she had every reason to dislike Barbara. I would have been protective of him. And look, she took him in when he was dying. So, you know, she really cared about him.
She wasn't all bad.
And Betty was a tough broad too. You know, she was not perfect. So.
But now, can I say this, Grace, before I forget? An actor and writer by the name of Frank John Hughes is currently writing a screenplay on Barbara's life that is based on my book.
Yay!
So he played Walden Belfior on The Sopranos. So he's an actor and a writer. And he evidently likes the story.
It's amazing. Amazing story.
He's currently writing the screenplay.
Yay. Thing. So I wish you all the luck with that. Because honestly, to me, this is a movie. This is not just I'm sorry, the stupid cord. And it's making funny noises, everybody.
Not funny. That's okay.
Yeah, but okay. So, yes, I'm so happy about that. And I really, my fingers are crossed for you, John, because
Thank you. You
did a wonderful piece of work. And I would advise anybody who hasn't read the book, read the book, you know, and yeah, it'll get you down. Maybe it'll get you mad. Maybe you want to send an obscene email to John, but don't.
Oh, boy.
Do not send him.
I have to screen my email.
No, do not send him an obscene. He's a very nice man. Don't send him obscene emails.
You know what my dream is
what?
For people who see if a film does get made.
Yes.
My dream is that people walk away from the film feeling something strongly. Whatever they feel, I just want them to feel it strongly.
Well, they should.
So I want them to be affected by it that much.
I was. Again. Maybe, and this is the second time I've read the book.
Oh, thanks. So, you know, maybe that's unrealistic of me. I mean, I don't want people to hate her, but I know there will be people who hate her.
Yes.
I just want people to understand her. I guess that's what would make me happy, if more people came to understand her.
You don't have to love her. You don't have to like her. But you can just go, wow.
She was a human being who was deeply flawed. But you know what? A lot of us are deeply flawed. We don't have the particular flaws that she had.
Thank God, yes.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of decent people who make terrible mistakes throughout their entire lives.
Every day, yes.
But, you know, a lot of them don't learn learn from their mistakes. And that was Barbara.
Yeah. And that was her tragic downfall. But on a positive note, you are such a charming darling. And I really enjoyed talking to you. And I want to talk to you again. If you get this on the road, I want to talk about Pro, HBO, anybody picking this up. And good luck to the guy writing the screenplay. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you. I wish him luck, too. And if I could talk to you sometime about my Yvette Vickers project, I would love that.
Oh, definitely. Well. And also when you get your coffee book? Table book. Yes, I love the pictures you sent me and all that info. But I told you, I don't ever share. I can keep my word. So I will not. And we'll have to talk then. And I would love to hear about your Yvette. Pickers.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great, Grace. Thank you.
And thank you so much. This was John O'Dowd, who wrote the wonderful book, the really wonderful, and you'll feel something, Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, The Barbara Payton Story, by John O'Dowd. And it is a doozy. And John, thank you. You are a darling. And thank you so much for coming on. And you were really great. I so appreciate it. And thank you guys, Grace, for listening. I hope we didn't depress you. Kiss, 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 kiss. Sanity. No bad stuff. All good. And but her story, you know, you can't really juggle while you're talking about it. Okay. So thanks, everybody. And stay tuned. And thank you, John. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.